Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, October 13th, 2011. And a number of interesting topics prior to the main science topic this evening. I'll be doing some updates on topics I've been covering for some time. But the main science topic, just to give you a preview, I'll be switching gears a little bit. I'm going to be talking about molds, bacteria, and viruses, some of them coming from outer space, some of them evolving in front of our very eyes here on planet Earth. I'll be talking about some of the recent developments with mold and kind of a strange way that I got involved in this personal study here. So tonight's main science topic, molds, bacteria, and those are mainly Earth-based items, but and also including viruses from outer space. How do they form? Where do they form? How do they get into our atmosphere? And how do they affect us? And what are some of the sources we can see today? And what are some of the sources that would not be sources of virus? And this is all very interesting. And we think, ooh, bacteria, molds, viruses. But on the other hand, there's a double-edged sword. I want to talk about that right now, because many things in life are two-edged swords. There's a good part and there's a bad part. What we're seeing here are new strains, for example, of mold, highly toxic molds. And we're all familiar with the black mold that's been around houses for some time. But there are some new strains growing by leaps and bounds. They're coming out, apparently, from what I'm understanding, they're coming out of the forests of the Pacific Northwest. They're growing on the trees, under the bark, and highly toxic, highly resistant to our standard chemicals strains. And so nobody really knows where these are coming from. But they're there, and they're moving out of those areas. And, of course, the wind comes from the west. So one might think that, gee, they came from China. They could have come from who knows, maybe. But these have been growing in abundance, let's put it that way, for the past 10 years. Another issue with just standard mold is it's growing by leaps and bounds. It's a chronic problem in the United States, and what's odd is it grows on just about every place where you live, because what do? We build structures, we clear out the woods, we clear out the natural mechanisms that halt the movement and growth of molds. For example, vinyl siding on houses all through suburbia, metal siding, aluminum siding, which are great advances, carefree maintenance on your house. But the end result is that mold just loves these surfaces. So what do you have? You have your entire existence where you live surrounded by mold, and some of these molds becoming more toxic. But the double-edged sword is that we live in a changing environment. Our immune systems only stay strong if they're constantly challenged. So if we lived in a sterile environment where we had no new bacteria, no new molds, and no new viruses from outer space, our immune systems would actually become lazy and weak, and we would have some physical problems. And then all of a sudden, if one came along, and this is what happened with the natives that lived in, for example, what we call now Latin America. When the Spanish came in, they brought in the standard diseases that were common in Europe, but these cultures, they were new to them. They millions of these people died off in a very short amount of time because the viruses and bacteria that were brought in from Europe, they had no resistance to. So all of a sudden, they were under attack. And so they couldn't adjust fast enough. So it's a constant battle to between the environment, the changing environment, and a species to adapt for its immune system to build up against whatever comes along. But also with viruses, now we're beset with a strange situation where NASA and the other space agencies, China is now involved in space exploration. Of course, Europe and Russia have been for a long time. But they're constantly bringing things back from outer space. We have spacecraft that have gone out specifically to fly through a comet tail, coming back with who knows what is on the collectors or on the spacecraft that go out and collect material from outer space, or just are out in outer space and come back in. So since the Gemini program, or the Mercury program, even the early NASA program, spacecraft have been going into space and then coming back in, and also satellites, communication satellites, anything that's been in outer space for a while certainly has had plenty of time to accumulate viruses. And then, for example, you know, what, a week ago, a week and a half ago, one of the U.S. satellites came back into the atmosphere, streaming across much of North America, apparently. Of course, NASA claims that it thinks it fell in the South Pacific Ocean, but there's a lot of indication that it came all the way across the United States, over the United States, and hit somewhere in middle and central Canada. But the point is that those spacecraft coming in, chunks of matter, the viruses hidden in there, could make it all the way down to the to ground and eventually start to grow. There's no control over any of this. So could we, as a human species, all of a sudden, and of course this is not my new idea here, I'm just going to talk about these. There's some new issues here with the new molds that are coming along, some of the bacteria issues, and then also the viruses from outer space. Comets and the planet Venus, actually, we know since the 1200s that the planet Venus has been responsible for viruses, flu viruses. The Chinese began tracking this as early as 1200 A.D., and was in the Chinese medical chronicles. And so eventually modern medical studies were performed, and the when Venus comes between Earth and the Sun, it is called the inferior conjunction of Venus. A conjunction is another word for alignment. But when Venus comes to its inferior, meaning it's between us and the Sun, so Venus inferior conjunction simply means that Venus comes between us and the Sun. And a short time after, we typically have a rise in flu. It starts out in birds, and it is then mutated by the birds. It goes to the swine, and then the swine to people. And so at any rate, when in the ancient days, the Israelites outlawed pork. And why did they do that? Because of the viral activity associated with Venus, which was a large comet. So when Earth passed through Venus's large comet tail back in those days, we had some serious viral influence on Earth, influx of viruses. And of course, getting into the pigs, they would immediately make the humans sick. And so pigs were outlawed. There was a reason for that. Not that the pork was bad or it had cleft toes or whatever. It's simply that pork had a system. In fact, they use tissue from pork for heart surgery, for hearts of pigs are put into people. All kinds of pig parts are used for humans because they're very adaptable. Likewise, the viruses that develop in pigs are very adaptable to humans, so we can get those viruses, mutate them, and then spread them to other human beings. So at any rate, and where do those come from? From the tails of comets, and especially the tail of Venus. Venus still has an active tail, and we pass through that as Venus comes around in its orbit between us and the Sun. So at any rate, I'll be filling in some more blanks there. But as I said, this is a two-edged sword. If we had, say we went into a space station, a million people go out into a space station, they go off into outer space. And say we made that a perfectly sterile environment, and those people could exist there, but if one little viral strain seeped into that spacecraft through the air duct systems or whatever, bringing in water from outer space, whatever that happened, then that virus could influence and affect and possibly kill off an entire space station with a million people in it. The point is, you cannot live in a sterile environment. You cannot live in an unchanging environment because your immune system will get weak, and eventually when something new comes in, your immune system will be weakened because it simply is not active, and eventually that would cause an entire species, like in the, if you wanted to call the South American indigenous people a different race, I guess, instead of different species. But they certainly looked a lot different than anything else, any other races in the world, because they had been over there for a very long time, is probably thousands of years at least, separated from the rest of the world. But anyway, their immune systems had adapted to the type of germs that were there, and of course, when the Spanish went to what is now Latin America and drank the water, they got sick because there were bacteria there that they couldn't handle. And a lot of people experience that when they go to Mexico. It's called Montezuma's Revenge. But it is nothing more than a bacteria that your system is not used to. The people that are used to it in Mexico drink the water all the time and it doesn't bother them. So at any rate, this kind of cross-pollination of cultures also brings a cross-pollination of mold, bacteria, viruses, and all of those things that we can't see, which can affect your health. So anyway, as I said, that'll be the main science topic. Before I go into that any deeper, I want to make a few quick announcements here. Upcoming, and as I'm sure many of you know, every year, as we the first 12 years of a century, we have a phenomenon that happens every year. This year, 2011, we have November 11th, 2011. So we have 11-11-11, a date. And so it's a little bit different than 10-10-10 or 09-09-09. 11-11-11 seems to be a number, 11 seems to be a number which the people who plan devious events or nefarious events against the human race, they seem to like the number 11. So how are they going to sidestep the fact that 11-11-11 is coming up? So anyway, we'll see. I'm not predicting anything. It's just that it only happens once every 100 years, and I can't imagine these people who use numerology and prime numbers and other patterns like that to plan events, that they're not planning something for that date. I've also heard that people are trying to make rumors that October 28th, which is an alignment, it's a superior conjunction of Earth with Jupiter. And so let me quick make a comment on that. Some people are saying, well, with that alignment, that's going to pull pieces of Comet Ellen and they away from the orbit of Comet Ellen. They're going to come crashing into Earth. Let me say that Comet Ellen has just about one more nail in its coffin to go, and that should be it, hopefully. The Comet Ellen people will hopefully hang their heads and crawl away into the dust. But you can bet that soon there will be another one, because you have to understand that all of the Comet Ellen misinformation, there's no better word. The Comet Ellen and misinformation and all of the little people running around, jumping up and down, making YouTube videos. And mind you, these are people that are used by the disinformation crew. The if these people didn't exist, these little usable ego people that have very needy egos, if they didn't exist, the disinformation crew would have to invent them. But there's no lack of people out there who can get fooled, who can run around, and but you have to understand the Comet Ellen and stuff that started in just after the first of the year this year. A lot of it trying to use my name, my work, and trying to sound like it. I wouldn't say they're using my work. They're trying to sound like it with electrical alignments and Comet Electrical and whatever. But somebody was writing the scripts for all this. These little Johnny up the street and Susie up the street didn't invent this and put together hour and a half long YouTube videos by themselves with all this detailed information. Someone with a lot of information, with a lot of trying to cloud and color real information, putting it in this and trying to make up stories to try and cause the public to, first of all, listen to this and then put all kinds of distorted ideas in their mind. This was well planned. This wasn't little Johnny up the street or little Susie up the street just doing all this. No, this was a major, major disinformation program that started a long time ago. Remember that the crazy lady talks to aliens May 15th, 2003. That was planned as early as 1995. And started out, and then they waited and then introduced it. So somebody's been at work for a long time planning this. And so all I would say is that no, Comet Elenin has no ability to break pieces off and send them earthbound so that they would come crashing into Earth on October 28th. And Jupiter is going to have an electrical alignment with Earth. There's no indication that we're going to have any major events due to that. Jupiter has been known to send pretty severe electrical discharges to Earth. Oh, I can't remember the year. In fact, about 10 years ago, the military measured extreme currents of electrons, and it was associated with Jupiter. And they measured this with military satellites. So there are effects that go on out there. And of course, they don't understand it. The people in Tier 1 understand that my work is correct. It explains these. But if you talk to people in Tier 2 NASA science, they have no clue. It doesn't exist in their world. Because all they know about is the garbage science that they learned when they got their PhDs. And of course, if they got a PhD in something, well, gee, that must be correct. Must it not? So at any rate, just to reiterate, no, Comet Ellenin on January 28th is not being pulled out of its orbit by Jupiter. And that's, once again, all gobbledygook. That's not the way celestial mechanics works. Jupiter is not pulling something out of its orbit like you would take a kid's car off of a track and all of a sudden it comes tumbling off. No, that's not the way it works. If a piece broke off of Comet Ellenin off the nucleus, it would continue to move very close to the same path as the main part of the comet. You would need an extremely violent explosion that would send a part of the main nucleus of Ellenin off in one direction and then this part off towards Earth. And, of course, that hasn't happened. So the bottom line is that no. Comet Ellenin is not going to send chunks off to crash into Earth. Jupiter is not causing anything to happen with Comet Ellenin. But the question is October 28th earmarked for some kind of man-made disaster caused by man, caused by the people that have been planning events for the human race, nefarious events? So in October 28th is just about the tail end of all of the Comet Ellenin predictions. all of the other ones have come and passed with nothing happening. And of course, that's part of the disinformation crew. Get everybody all riled up starting around January, last January. Everybody's looking at these dates. Woo, September 26th or whatever. And then it comes and goes, and the people go, oh, nothing happened. There's no truth to comets are electrical and all the laundry list of things that, of concepts that were put into Comet Elenin. Now a lot of people will be dissuaded. And that was the original point. Also, it gives NASA the white hats to come riding in and save the day and say, gee, there's nothing to all this craziness on the internet. So it's a designed dog and pony show. So anyway, that's just a little recap on Comet Elenin. But as I said, all of the dates and the big events and the mass destruction of Comet Elenin, and all those dates have come and gone, and nothing has happened. The one thing you can say is we have had a lot of man-made events on dates related to Comet Elenin. And so that tells me that the numerology, the astrology, those type of aspects have been used by the people that plan these events. Okay, so enough of that. Okay, last week I made a comment about Bank of America. And I said, these banks have to go. Anything you can do to Bank of America to crush it, go ahead. And I got some feedback from listeners. So I want to clarify what I was saying there. This is not specifically about you and your bank account or your checking account, or I got all kinds of comments about that Bank of America was okay. I'm not talking about you going into the bank and or writing checks or something like that. No, these banks have a very heavy duty, in my opinion, criminal activity going on. Let's take a few examples. Bank of America took $36 billion in bailout money, which was designed to help the population. They pretty much put that in their pocket. There are many lawsuits now pending against Bank of America for not performing on the so-called Obama Help a Homeowner program. And this was designed to help homeowners. But oddly enough, let's make one other issue here. Apparently, there are about at least a million home loans under Bank of America that are seeking relief under the Obama umbrella to help relieve homeowners from the struggling with their home loans. Only 12,000 have been helped to date, and many of those, it's very questionable the level of help that they've gotten. So basically, the lawsuits involve this. Bank of America has been dragging its feet, sending people into foreclosure. They even have a new term for it. They call it transitioning you from your house. It's not foreclosure or throwing you out on the street. You're being transitioned from your house. Much, much nicer way of saying it. Much more politically correct. So you're being transitioned from your house. Okay, one other issue that I've discovered, that Bank of America had a team of loan specialists that worked on the following. Once they found out that January 1st, 2009 was the magic Obama date, where before that date you would have qualified for the Obama program, but after that date, if your loan had been initiated after January 1st, 2009, then you would not qualify for the Obama relief program. So what did they do? Bank of America comes in and calls up people and says, we're going to rewrite your loan. Aren't we swell people? So they rewrite people's loans for a few percentage less, or percentage points, or decimal points of a percentage. And the people think, wow, isn't that swell of Bank of America? But what they were doing was moving people's origination date of their loans out beyond the January 1st, 2009 date, so they wouldn't qualify for the Obama relief program. So at any rate, yeah, so these are great people. So when I talk about Bank of America or their predecessor, that many of the loans came from Countrywide, these people are crooks. They belong in prison. or the middle of the bottom of the ocean, somewhere like that, in the banks, simply are the cause of the demise of this country, and they simply have to be completely taken out of commission and replaced with a real banking system. So I hope that clarifies what I was saying about not only Bank of America, but all the banks in the United States and all the banks around the world who are in this phony loaning money to each other program. It's kind of like a big circle where one bank loans to another and then another and that bank loans to another. And eventually, it's there's no real money. It's just money on a piece of paper. And so once one of the links falls out, one of them defaults, like Greece or say Germany, one of the countries defaults, then the chain is broken and the whole charade comes tumbling down. Okay, a quick mention about NASA last week, and I'm not going to belittle NASA too much more, but they keep on with this charade that comets are little snowballs. And, of course, they don't have any proof of it. NASA, in its five visits to comets, has never identified or found their little snowball. They found hot, dry rocks. One of them has a black, tarry surface on it. Well, gee, that would be hydrocarbons. And that's exactly what they found. But no ice or snow, yet they continue calling them little snowballs. So at any rate, if you are not familiar with this story, a number of weeks ago I was on Coast to Coast. On the news segment, I was talking about the solar conditions, which were pretty weak at the time. And I said, by the way, there's a comet coming in about to hit the sun in a couple hours. That's when NASA took down the feeds from the SOHO satellite and all the other publicly available vistas of the sun, and didn't put them back until Sunday. At any rate, here's the latest. And if you're not familiar with that story, I don't have time to reiterate it here. Go back and listen to my radio shows, the last couple, where I talk in detail about that. But at any rate, finally, and so NASA still has this posted on the SOHO webpage. SOHO is the Solar Observatory, Heliospheric Observatory. And it shows a picture of this comet streaking in towards the sun. And it says, let me just read what they say here. However, getting so close almost always destroys these comets. So we can see them going in, but not going back out. And then, okay, now this is the part about talking about the sun grazing comet, that it has no ability to trigger a coronal mass ejection. The question, this is quoting from the SOHO webpage where they're commenting on this comet coming in and the simultaneous tremendous explosions going on in the sun. It says, the question of whether a sun-grazing comet can somehow trigger a coronal mass ejection is an intriguing one. So far, the feeling is that apparent relationship between some comets and some mass ejections is simply one of coincidence. At this stage of the solar cycle, the sun is producing many mass ejections. In fact, there were several earlier in the day. And it probably just happened by chance that one of them was around at the same time as the approach of the comet. Some researchers have been looking for a more direct relationship, but nothing as yet has come out of these efforts. Okay, so they're admitting that they have no clue why a comet should cause a coronal mass ejection. They're admitting that there are many of these observations, but they don't want to talk about it. And then they have an analysis. Some guy says, big comet, big CME, big coincidence. And he goes in to tell you that comets are just little, and they couldn't affect the sun, and so they, no. There's no relationship between a comet hitting the sun. Let me start out that when satellites were first put into outer space, they immediately began seeing comets affected by the sun. And so these analyses of comets hitting the sun are very partial and biased. there was a comet, and I'm trying to think of the name offhand, but the Skylab astronauts were in the Skylab. This is back in the early space age. I'm trying to think if this was in the 70s even. It must have been in the 80s, Skylab. I'm trying to think of the year. But anyway, there was a comet that came around by the sun, and they took pictures of it with cameras. They had various types of camera, and they had X-ray detectors, and they detected in all these different wavelengths the connection between this comet passing by the sun and the sun. And then, boom, out came a big flare, and that flare also connected with the planet Mercury, causing Mercury to take on somewhat of a comet characteristic. But at any rate, the point is that the observation of comets passing near the sun and affecting the sun goes way back. So they have a long and rich history at NASA of ignoring this data and pretending that comets are just little snowballs. Well, of course, they want to ignore as hard as they can the fact that you people can listen directly to me, and I can tell you, like last week's show, part of my show, I explained how comets can affect the sun, how they do affect the sun, and why they would cause a coronal mass ejection. Okay, so at any rate, I just wanted to follow up the ongoing saga, you might say, of the little comet. Not so little, it actually was a very large comet that hit the sun last, October 3rd. Okay, a couple product updates here. By the way, the sun right now is calm, and the sun was very calm after that massive explosion of the sun, which lasted about 8 hours. And the sun was very calm before that. So for them to say that, oh, the sun had some CMEs that same day, is absurd, because when that comet came in, it was like the sky came apart on the sun. The sun blew and blew and blew for about 8 hours, something that's totally, totally unprecedented. We had double CMEs from sunspot 1302 and 1305 that came out and became connected. And the flares were coming off the backside of the sun. It was an amazing set of fireworks to see. But they're still trying to downplay that and pretend like nothing happened. Okay, just a little product update here. It occurred to me that I haven't talked enough about the fluoride arsenic filters, the little add-on filters that go on the Dalton water filters. You have the top container of the Dalton two-piece water filter. The candles, as they're called, they look like white candles that sit in the upper unit. And below that, sticking down into the lower unit, there are some add-on arsenic fluoride filters. And they basically, through a chemical reaction, they pull the arsenic and fluoride and some other chemicals out of the water. And typically, we've encouraged people who live in cities that have city water to buy these. It occurred to me that one of the main chemicals, poisonous chemicals, that can come out of comet tails, which would be a Planet X-type encounter of Earth with Planet X, would be arsenic. And so these would be something you would remember I was talking about the Moses event, for example, a number of weeks ago. I forget, it was back in August. I did a show about the Moses event and the poisoning of water. A lot of the poisons that come out of comet tails would be taken out by this little filter. And so the point is that, as traditionally I've talked about these as being something you would use if you had city water and you were using your water filter to filter city water. But now I'm really have to promote the idea that if these should be used for backup, and you could possibly need them for an extended period of time, because if that poison or poisonous chemicals came into the atmosphere, they would definitely get into the water, and you would need water filtration of those for some time. And you need the add-on filter to do that. So at any rate, I'm just encouraging people, if you don't have your add-on filters, they're on my webpage, jmccsci.com, think about getting a set or possibly two sets. And even if you have water that comes from a well on the farm, there's a good chance one of the chronic chemical poisons in all of the United States is arsenic. So anyway, that's a little information that I think could be helpful for your health. Regarding the new CD, I wanted to quick go over the topics again very quickly. It's a two CD set, 18 hours of lectures that I put out, and it's moving quite well. Let's put it that way. I'm very pleased. It's now in full release with all the topics released. But the first CD has the following topics: Planet X objects, a brief history of celestial disasters, the Noah's flood event, the Moses event, ancient Egyptians, the tale of Atlantis, the physics of the Colburn. And by the way, all of these topics, I talk about the physics of celestial disasters in ancient history. And that's the point. We can learn by these what the ancients tell us, because they lived through some of these events with the major comets coming through the solar system. They lived through these, and so by knowing what the physics was, what were they seeing, what caused the visual effects and the physical effects, would you learn from understanding what was really going on, and that would allow you to make intelligent decisions on how to survive one of these events. So then I talk about the physics of the Colburn, the ancient Mayans, the modern Mayans, Mexico and the ancient Americas, modern myths and quacks, the physics of Tesla. There's a four-part series of 1 hour each, so this is 4 hours total, on the science of the many Planet X objects. There's another four-part series, 1 hour each, so a total of 4 hours each, on the psychology of Planet X. Then disc number two, disc number one has 13 total hours of lecture. Disc number two has 5 hours of lecture, starting off with Velikovsky, the physics of the Venus event, when Venus was a large comet coming through the solar system as a large comet. This is the Velikovsky, or what I call the Venus event. I talk about the credibility, why Velikovsky had to be buried, secret societies, and control. There's a three-part series interview with Warner Sizemore, which I did with Warner, a good friend of mine, March 22nd, 2008, where he was the personal assistant to Velikovsky throughout Velikovsky's lifetime. And so it's a great series of about 2 hours worth of lecture there, or interview. Then part seven of disc number two, what did Velikovsky really say? Then part eight, the axioms of astronomy. Part nine, of calendars and timescales. Number 10, a very important extensive analysis, the physics of Earth changes. It's an extensive laundry list of Earth changes, and I go down one by one, giving you the physics of what causes them, what the science is behind them, and the visual effects, the physical effects, etc. But what is the cause of these Earth changes? Then there's a summary conclusion and an epilogue regarding the Venus event as related to, was it the Noah event or the Moses event? So anyway, okay, enough of that. The new CD, and remember the flax. I think a lot of people forget the flax products on the page. Something that you would use every day and very healthy for. I would recommend that everybody get the 40-ounce bag of cold ground flax. It's something that you can put a little scooper, you put it on your cereal, you put it in anything you drink, one scoop per day, and let me tell you, it's a tremendous health benefit. You can also buy it in the seed form, and by the gallon. So at any rate, what else? Just a quick note, the Calculate Primes book is out of its latest printing, and there were a couple back orders there. Those have been shipped. And so right now we're starting to reprint the Planet X and the Atlantis to Tesla book. The Planet X book Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes going into its ninth printing, and the Atlantis to Tesla going into its, I think, sixth printing, or something like that. But at any rate, it's amazing that all of these books are still very popular, and the information is as valid and solid today as it was when these books first came out. But we still do have stock of those, and hopefully the reprinting will be done before, so there won't be any gap in distribution of those books. But I just want to let people know these reprinting costs are very extensive, and so if you're thinking about ordering anything from the webpage, now would be a good time. It would help me out with the reprinting costs. And as you know, this show comes to you commercial-free. All of this is done with a very low budget, you might call it. So it's mainly to keep the information going to the people out there. So I always say I have the best audience in the world. I don't have the biggest audience, but it's quite sizable, but I have the best audience, let's put it that way. People that know what's going on. Okay, on to the main science topic. Let me explain how I started. All of us know about mold. We know about the mold problem. For example, many houses had mold come in, and there was some sheetrock that came in from China, and it hadn't been cured properly. It had mold in it. It was causing people to be sick. And they were smelling a sulfur smell, which was really a result. It was kind of a chemical reaction. As the mold grew, then people started smelling sulfur, which was a acidy byproduct of the mold growing in the sheetrock. But at any rate, my own personal experience with mold was a little while ago. I happened to be staining my deck, one of those little home projects, you know, and you go to the lumber yard and you get the things they tell you to buy this and buy this, and you know, and not a big deal. But so anyway, I took the this liquid, and you spray it on with a little hand pump sprayer, and it's a fine mist, and that kills the mold that's on your deck. And the mold turns the wood black. And you think, well, gee, this has got to be very deep down into the wood, this black color. It's a very deep black color. But you spray it with this little fine mist of this stuff, which is a green product, by the way. It's not a chemical. It's not harmful to the environment. And you let it sit there for 10 or 15 minutes, and then you spray it off with a hose. You let it dry, and you put the finish, whatever finish you're putting on your deck. Well, that's fine, and I was amazed at how bright and yellow and fresh and new the wood looked after this. I thought, gee, that's quite the product. But then I noticed that my house was about 8 shades brighter, and my house happens to be white. It's a white vinyl siding. And where the overspray was from the deck, there were little spots, of course, where the spray had hit, and it was shiny white, just like brand new. And I'm thinking, gee, what is this about? Is this a chemical? It cleaned the house up. Well, I went back and I started doing some research, only to find out that the vinyl siding on your house is covered with mold. And so then I took the same product and I kind of sprayed it along the side of the house on a test area. And if you took and just sprayed that off, even with a pressure hose, it's not going to clean off that mold. This chemical kills the mold. And so all of a sudden, after about a half an hour, the house is brilliant white. Wow, this is interesting. So then I started researching mold, only to find out that all of suburbia and metropolitan areas around the country have mold growing around the environment. A lot of houses have mold growing inside of them. There's a thing called vapor barriers, especially in the northern climates. You put insulation in, and as the cold and the sun hits and the day warms up and then gets cool at night, that fluctuation in temperature causes condensation. I also found out some very interesting facts that this swing in temperature and humidity that goes along with it can get into, say, flooring products and cause them to buckle and absorb water, and it'll destroy them if they're not in a very tightly controlled humidity temperature controlled environment. And so I'm starting to realize that that we have created our environment to create a house, a nice temperature-controlled house, on the periphery, or sometimes in the basement, or with cement on a basement floor, and then you put carpeting or something like that on top of it. What you've really done is you've created the ideal conditions for mold to grow. Okay, so this, you know, there's nothing new or earth-shattering about this, but in researching this topic, what I found out was that in the past 10 years, that the level of mold in the United States has skyrocketed. It's a severe problem. It's a severe problem in the South, but it causes toxic mold. There's a number of varieties of this. And so it's very toxic for children, for older people, people with weakened immune systems. And if you do have a good immune system, it can eventually break it down and cause you to become sick. So, at any rate, that's interesting. Then I found out, and I mentioned this earlier, that in the Pacific Northwest, there are new resistant strains of mold that are resistant to the typical mold-removing chemicals that we would find in, say, the hardware store or the lumber yard. But these molds are highly toxic. Not just the kind, there's the typical black mold that you hear about. There are many lawsuits, there are many insurance claims, there are many issues with, but this is called Stachybotrys chartarum, and I don't know if I've pronounced that exactly correctly, but that's the short English term is toxic black mold. That's the type of mold that you typically find around your house, in the basement, between the walls of your between the inner wall of your house and the outer wall. The mold that's attached to the siding on your house, etc., etc. Or you can imagine in the trees around your house, in the bark, etc., especially on the north side of the tree, that you would find that mold. But what's happening, number one, there's an immense increase in the amount of mold, and it's directly related to the type of housing that is built in the United States. So with all of the codes and the building of buildings that we have, we also are creating an environment that is very conducive to this type of mold. But also in treating this mold, toxic, non-conforming or resistant strains are developing. And so here's where the real problem comes in. That's the same situation with Roundup Ready weeds, for example. The weeds that are becoming resistant to Roundup, the chemical that has been used now for, a decade or more, for industrial farming, you might call it, for hybrid types of corn, soybeans, etc. It's actually laced genetically into the corn seed or soybean seed or other type of hybrid seed. And so it's called Roundup Ready. But seeds of weeds are becoming resistant to this. So the bottom line is, any chemical type of, let's carry this over to the pharmaceutical industry, or for animals, talking about concentrations of animals in feedlots, chickens, turkeys, pigs, cattle, cows, whatever, in a concentrated area, of course, the standard method of treating for these is with antibiotics that then are fed to the animals in their food, but then they become weak and their immune systems become weak, And this passed on not only the chemicals, the antibiotics are passed on to the humans that eat the meat, but also the weakening of the immune system in people. So at any rate, it's the same situation with the molds, the new toxic molds, the strains that are developing, the resistant to treatment type of molds. And you just wonder if all of our fear of Planet X or all of the other things that might come in and totally destroy Earth, one of these could creep out of the woodwork one day and basically level the human population, bring it down overnight. So that brings up the topic of viruses from outer space. I want to mainly, you can read about the bacteria, the other types of toxic bacterias, and of course there's a lot of material on that, but what I want to concentrate on are the viruses from outer space. I've talked many times about viruses from outer space, the fact that they develop in comet tails, and this is how they develop. I want to go into the physics of how a viral cell develops in outer space. You have an electrical discharge of the solar capacitor with the nucleus of the comet discharging that capacitor. The comet tail, the materials are being drawn into the comet nucleus by powerful electric forces, and so those chemicals are forming literally in the comet tail as they basically come colliding in electric fields. These are ideal conditions for basic molecular structures to form from the basic atomic elements. So if you have, for example, if we have abundances of carbon, oxygen, hydrogen, and nitrogen, those are the basic building blocks of the nucleotides of which DNA is built, of those the nucleotides, and then the viruses, of course, are built up from those. So these are basically chemical factories. The comet tail is a chemical factory. Why does Venus have a tail? Well, Venus is still a comet. It's not very obvious, but we've seen Venus flaring up a number of times, especially when it comes into inferior conjunction with Earth. You can see this with the SOHO satellite, which sits out about a million miles to the sunward side of Earth. So it gives you enough of a vantage point of Venus that when a number of times I've seen this personally, Venus will come around, it starts to connect electrically with Earth, and all of a sudden, whoosh, out comes the comet tail from Venus. And of course, NASA doesn't want to talk about that because that would, of course, imply that Venus, a planet, is really acting like a comet. It's not a little dirty snowball. And of course, the medical journals are very specific that when Venus comes through inferior conjunction, that there is a rise in not only viral flus on Earth to Earthlings, to people, but there's a rise in sunspots. There's a noticeable rise in the sunspot count during the inferior conjunction of Venus. That's because the electrical connection to the sun is increased, the electrical current to the sun increases, and just like the comet that hit the sun a week ago or a week and a half ago, that electrical stimulation is enough to kick off activity on the surface of the sun. So all of this makes sense if you understand we live in an electrical solar system. It's these objects, the Earth, the Venus, comets, etc., are discharging the solar capacitor, and all of these effects, including the formation of viruses in comet tails. So when Earth passes through the comet tail, there's an influx of this cometary material, this chemical construction that's in the tail of a comet. And now I've even seen this happen a number of years ago. I predicted that it was April of the year. The Venus was coming around for its inferior conjunction. But there was a very excited state. There was a cometary alignment going on at that time. And I said, okay, we're going to see a much more excited Venus tail during this particular inferior conjunction. Therefore, the positioning of Earth as it passes through the tail of Venus is going to be different. So we're going to get a different strain of virus out of this, and in fact, we did. You could see it, and I even gave a date. It was about 2 weeks. I said, give this virus about 2 weeks incubation time to go from the birds to the swine. It'll come out of China, and it'll come to the United States via tourism, etc. And sure enough, just like clockwork, the virus did come in to Earth. And we did have a serious flu influenza, and it was a new strain. So this is all very predictable. Modern medical science recognizes this, but once again, the bad science and astronomy at NASA and the standard scientific community does not give any theoretical basis for this. So I get a kick out of the write-up how the people at the so-called standard scientists are looking into this problem of how could a little ice ball form a big CME on the sun. And I bet you $100 that within a month or so, somebody's going to come up with something and they're going to say, oh, it causes some kind of plasma magnetic instability near the sun. And that can kick off a chain reaction. It's like the mouse helping the lion, and all of a sudden you have CMEs coming out of the sun due to little comets coming by. I can just see it happening. I can just see this happening. So, and then life will be good again at NASA, because the pressure's on them to come up with some kind of explanation. But at any rate, of course, they've been saying for years that this is ridiculous, that it can't happen. But under pressure, they might have to come up with something to satisfy the fact that data is overwhelming. And if more comets come in causing these big CME flares, it's going to be more egg on their face. So they need some kind of hip pocket theory so that life is good at NASA again. At any rate, the point of this show was to talk about the viruses and the where they form. They form in outer space, in the tail of comets, or other energetic locations, like if you had, especially comets, because they have a very energetic electrical current passing through them. At any rate, hope that helps you understand where these come from, and also why the ancients had to paint their doors and close their doors when the massive comets came through the solar system. Remember to visit the webpage, jmccsci.com, and remember the mail order address, JMCC, P.O. Box 58,